Hello and welcome to Sound Body, a weekly program of information on health topics and ideas that can help you live life to its fullest. I'm Louise Craig. I was impressed by the articles in the Diabetic Living Magazine Summer 2019 issue. It is full of substantive articles with information about how to appeal a medical insurance claim denial, diabetes toolkits that can be delivered to your door without the hassle of insurance or prescriptions, how to find the right footwear if you have neuropathy, and how the Orange is the New Black star, Leah Delaria, manages her type 2 diabetes. With all that and more to get to, let's just dive right in. First article is Get Your Health Claims Covered, and this was written by Debbie Koenig. If you have health insurance, at some point you may receive a bill for something that you thought would be covered. A 2017 study from the Doctor Patients' Rights Project found that 24% of people with chronic illnesses, including diabetes, had a claim denied by their insurance company. But among those who appealed the decision, the denial was overturned nearly half the time. Often people assume the insurance company made a mistake and will fix it. But without an appeal, that doesn't happen, says Susan Null, a principal at the medical bill advocacy firm Systematic Inc. Anytime you get an unexpected bill, you need to be the one to start investigating, says Null. Without initiating conversations, nothing's going to happen, she says. 1. Best prevention is the best medicine. The best way to ensure claims are covered happens before you even see a provider. Call your insurance company. Your doctor doesn't know the particulars of your plan, but your insurance company can tell you exactly what's covered in your policy, as well as which providers and pharmacies are in network. Call to check what's covered before scheduling tests and procedures or filling new prescriptions. For pre-approval of procedures, ask your doctor's office for the current procedural terminology, CPT codes, they plan to use, then read these exact codes to your insurance company. If they say you don't need something pre-authorized, get it in writing, says Adria Gross of MedWise Insurance Advocacy. Even what's supposed to be a free annual physical can lead to unexpected out-of-pocket expenses, Null says, since the insurance company and your doctor may not have the same definition of routine testing. Arrive at your physical with the specific CPT codes approved by the insurance company, though, and you should be fine. Number 2, if you get a denial. Even when you do everything right, sometimes an explanation of benefits, EOB, delivers bad news or is confusing. EOBs differ in structure and substance across insurance companies, but they almost always give as little information as possible, says Null. This makes it hard to determine if your claim has been processed correctly. You'll need to call the insurance company and ask a representative to explain it to you. Before you do, though, make sure you have an itemized bill from your provider and compare it to what appears on the EOB. Did you see multiple doctors in one visit? Check that each is listed with separate procedure codes. If the insurance company sees the same code listed twice for one doctor, they won't cover it, says Gross. 3. Making the call. Anytime you call your insurance company, the more information you gather, the better. Here's step-by-step advice from medical billing advocates. Ask for a reference number and the name of the person you're speaking with. Write both of these down along with the date and time. I've gotten denials turned around because a representative gave incorrect information, Null says. In certain situations, Gross recommends requesting written confirmation of what you've been told. When the representative says a procedure is covered or pre-authorization isn't required, and when someone quotes you the cost of a procedure or medication, you may need to go up the ladder to get a verification letter. If something feels wrong or inconsistent, ask more questions. Don't hang up until you understand. Not getting answers? ask to speak with a supervisor. If the representative says your provider made a mistake or didn't include enough information, call the provider immediately. If the provider points a finger back at the insurance company, go back and ask the representative to set up a three-way conversation so you can all talk. At the end of each call, ask one last question. Are you certain about what you've just told me, or do you need additional information? Then ask whether the call has been recorded. That seals the deal if you ever need to dispute something, Nall says. And they give a case study in the sideline here. Crystal Aprigliano, she's the CEO of the Diabetes Patient Advocacy Coalition. But sometimes Crystal Aprigliano has to advocate for herself. After outpatient surgery for trigger finger, a complication of diabetes that causes a finger to get stuck in a bent position, she was billed $1,200. The anesthesiologist was out of network. Aprigliano pushed back immediately, arguing that since she'd gone through the proper pre-authorization procedures, she had no way of knowing. Ultimately, she won. And we go back to the fourth tip in this article, filing an appeal. If phone calls don't get you anywhere, it's time to appeal. Your EOB will include instructions on filing and timing, so consult it first. But before you start the process, check with your provider's office. They're entitled to appeal too, and because they know the process better, they stand a better chance of winning. If the denial is for a medical reason, rather than because the treatment is simply not covered, your doctor can request a peer-to-peer review. She'll talk on the phone with a doctor at the insurance company and explain your treatment plan. If your provider's appeals don't succeed, find out what reason the insurance company gave, then refute it when building your own case. Most claims that are denied for medical reasons will have three levels of appeal, two with the insurance company and then an external review conducted by an independent party. You'll need to provide more information with each round to counter the reason for each denial. Sometimes you'll feel like you're playing detective. You have to lead the insurance company from point to point and explain specifically, like in a legal case, why they shouldn't be denying the claim, says Nall. After your appeals have been exhausted, don't give up. Ask for an external review and request someone who's trained in diabetes care to review the case. If that review goes in your favor, the insurance company is legally required to pay. And they have another case study. Melissa Lee, a community relations director in Milpitas, California, Melissa Lee has had type 1 diabetes for almost 3 decades. When she was denied coverage for a CGM system, she researched online to find the insurance company's medical policy, which isn't usually shared with patients. It spells out the criteria for coverage. She met all the criteria, so she was able to build a successful case using her logged glucose numbers and other documentation. One other sidebar is insider tips from advocates. As soon as you get a bill, pay attention. Don't assume someone else will catch mistakes. Many first appeals are denied outright. Don't give up. If you're uncertain about how to file an appeal, your state's Consumer Assistance Program can help. If your state doesn't have a CAP, the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services website, cms.gov, lists other agencies that can help you. If you see lots of doctors due to complications of diabetes, consider hiring a medical billing advocate as a sort of concierge who will handle problems on your behalf. Rates can be as low as $50 a month per person, and it could save you hundreds, says Nall. Consult the Alliance of Claims Assistance Professionals, claims.org, to find an advocate. And we will go now to Leah. Leah's rules. And this is as told to Lambeth Huckwald. Stomach pain prompted a diagnosis. In 2014, I went to the doctor because I had persistent abdominal pain. I had so many tests, but the doctors were unable to tell me what that was about. 6 months later, I went back for a follow-up. The pain was gone, but my A1C was 11%, and my blood sugar was 500. My brother has diabetes, my mother had it, and yet I was still so shocked, but so thankful that they did that blood work. Figuring out dosing was a lifesaver. I was immediately put on metformin and joined a study that's supposed to go on for a decade. The goal is to find out what medicine goes best with metformin, so I'm also taking Victoza. I take 1,000 milligrams of metformin in the morning and 1,000 milligrams at night. I recently figured out that if I separate my doses, I'll feel better on the medication. At night, I set my alarm, take my metformin, and go back to sleep. I also separate it from my coffee intake in the morning to help my stomach. Losing weight wasn't the goal. I've lost 60 pounds since my diagnosis, and my A1C is now 5.8%, but I'll always be a very positive body image person. Weight loss was never important to me. I've joked about this a ton in my stand-up. Sure, I'm happy I lost the weight, but it's more because I needed to versus how I look. I've always been sexy. Planning always helps. I don't eat much most days because I don't have much of an appetite, but I always keep hard-boiled eggs in my fridge. I'm a planner. If I'm out with friends, let's say it's brunch, I'll have the bubbles, a mimosa without orange juice, eggs, and maybe bacon or sausage. If I haven't had a lot of bread that week, I'll have a slice of wheat toast. Dinner is protein-based with lots of green vegetables. I plan and I don't cheat on food. That's the deal I made with myself. Giving up sweets was an easy choice. I don't give an F about a cupcake. I know that sugar is addictive and people struggle with this all the time. I'm not shaming others. I know it's hard, but I don't want to eat cake. I'd rather have 10 years of my life. When I got this diagnosis, I took control. I said to myself, I don't want to die young. I'd like to make it to my hundreds. Why can't I be the lesbian George Burns? And we go to an article written by Christine Yu and titled, When the Shoe Fits. It's estimated that up to 50% of people with diabetes have peripheral neuropathy, a type of nerve damage that affects your ability to sense pain and hot or cold temperatures. And as many as half may have no symptoms. Normally, if you have a blister, you feel it and stop wearing a certain shoe. But if you don't have sensation in your feet, you may keep wearing the shoe and walking on the area that's sore, says Manara Dini, DPM, a podiatrist in the Center for Limb Preservation at UCSF Medical Center. Those pressure points can turn into foot ulcers and cause a cascade of problems, but the right footwear can go a long way toward keeping serious foot complications at bay. Since shoes break down over time, take inventory every 6 to 12 months. How do your feet feel in the shoes? Have any parts of the shoe worn down? Telltale signs shoes need to go. They do not feel as supportive. The heel caves to one side or is worn down. The forefoot shows excessive wear, and the lining is thinning or tearing. Walking and jogging shoes should be retired at 300 to 500 miles or at least every 5 months. When you're ready to hit the store, keep these tips in mind. Start with a good supportive sole. Cushioned outer soles like EVA soles on running shoes or Vibram soles on some dress shoes are shock absorbent, says John Guierney, DPM, Chief of Podiatry at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Opt for shoes made from breathable material like fabric or soft leather and with laces or Velcro, which let you adjust the fit to your feet. A padded tongue and collar, the rim around the shoe, will cushion your feet and ankles. If you have hammer toes or Charcot joint, look for extra depth shoes to accommodate these structural foot changes. Giarni recommends steering clear of rigid leather or rubber soles and slip-on styles like loafers. Walking or athletic shoes are a good choice for everyday wear. For vigorous activities like hiking, it's even more important to find a shoe that fits well and protects your feet and ankles. There's a lot of up and down movement when you hike, so it's important to stop and check your feet regularly, advises Deanie. While wearing sandals and flip-flops may seem like the perfect way to stay cool during warmer months, open-toe styles don't safeguard your toes and feet. The straps can also put pressure across the foot and lead to sores, says nurse and certified diabetes educator David Miller, RN, MSED, diabetes care coordinator for Community Health Network in Indianapolis. There's only one way to tell if a shoe fits. Try it on. Since your feet change shape and size over time, have them measured by a certified shoe fitter or podorthist each time you buy new shoes. Shop at the end of the day when your feet tend to be bigger, and if you have inserts or orthotics, don't forget to bring them. When you try on a pair of shoes, stand up. You should have about an inch of room at the end of your toes, says Karen Andrews, MD, an associate professor in the Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation at the Mayo Clinic. Make sure your foot has space to spread and the shoe is wide enough to accommodate your foot without creating pressure points, she says, but not so much space that your foot slips side to side. Feel inside the shoe, too. Seams or bulky linings can bunch up and cause hot spots. With neuropathy, the decreased sensation in your feet can make it hard to determine if a shoe fits. Oftentimes, people choose a shoe that's too small. They perceive the snug feeling as a good fit, but it can be too tight, says Gierney. A narrow toe box can squish your toes and cause corns, calluses, and other injuries. Socks provide an extra layer of protection between your shoe and skin, reducing the risk of blisters. Melissa Joy Dobbins, MSRDN-CDE, recommends seamless, moisture-wicking styles that keep your feet dry and don't pinch around the calves or ankles. Look for breathable material like cotton, wool, or acrylic, especially for exercise. A little extra padding on the heel and ball of the foot helps too. It's exciting to get a new pair of shoes, but don't wear them all day right out of the box. Wean into wearing new shoes the first week, says Andrews. Start with an hour the first day and add 30 minutes each day. Once you get to 3 hours with no hot spots, you're good to go. Not sure your shoes are right for your feet? Your podiatrist can evaluate them. Bunions, hammer toes, and other changes to the shape of your foot can create pressure points and sores. Custom inserts can be molded around these problem areas and disperse the shock, allowing the area to float rather than hit the ground directly. Ask for inserts specifically designed for people with diabetes, which provide three layers of protection and support. Over-the-counter insoles could be appropriate for common conditions like plantar fasciitis or foot or ankle pain, but significant foot problems usually will require a custom solution, says Gierney. If your blood sugar is in your goal range and you don't have a history of foot ulcers or neuropathy, stick with shoes from your local store. If you have a history of serious diabetes-related foot disease, therapeutic shoes may help. They're designed to redistribute the forces applied to your feet when you walk, reducing your risk of foot ulcers. Medicare Part B may help pay for therapeutic shoes and inserts. If you qualify and have a prescription from a podiatrist or another qualified physician, you'll be fitted by a podiatrist, podorthist, or orthotist and receive either one pair of extra-depth shoes and up to three inserts, or one pair of custom molded shoes or inserts and up to two additional inserts each year. Here's a little column, happy and healthy feet. 1. Check your feet every day. Look for redness, swelling, blisters, or skin or nail changes. Use a mirror or ask for help if you have trouble seeing your feet. 2. Wash your feet daily. Use warm, not hot water and dry well after washing, especially between your toes. 3. Keep your toenails trimmed. Your podiatrist can help with this too. 4. Don't go barefoot. It's easy to step on something and hurt your feet, so keep them covered indoors and out. 5. Shake out your shoes. There may be a stray rock or Lego hiding inside. 6. visit your podiatrist. Get a complete foot exam annually or every 2 to 3 months if you have neuropathy. Here's some shorter columns. This first one is called Bundle Up. These companies deliver the supplies you need right to your door without the hassle of insurance or prescriptions. The first is MySugar, MYSUGR. The first bundle includes a FastClicks lancing device, 102 lancets, 5 boxes of test strips, and an AccuCheck guide meter that syncs with the MySugar app to log blood glucose levels and track your test strip usage. Each month, you'll receive unlimited test strips to match your usage, as well as access to certified diabetes educators. And that is $49 a month and is from mysugar.com, mysugr.com. Next, we have One Drop. The starter kit includes these One Drop supplies, a meter that syncs with the One Drop mobile app, a lancing device, 25 test strips, 10 lancets, and a stylish carrying case. Then select a 90-day supply of strips and lancets based on how often you check, or order as you need. You'll also have 24/7 access to certified diabetes educators. Plans start at $80 for a 3-month supply, and you can find that at onedrop.today. onedrop.today. And lastly, we have DiaThrive. Every 3 months, you'll receive test strips, control solution, and lancets to match your testing frequency. Your first order will also include a free meter, a lancing device, and a carrying case. Pause or make changes to your order anytime. All products include a lifetime warranty and a 100% money-back guarantee, a rarity among meter companies. Plans start at $24 for a 3-month supply, and that comes from diathrive.com, DIAthrive.com. And we move to another little column, an aspirin a day. Even people with diabetes who have a lower risk of heart disease may benefit from an aspirin a day to help prevent heart attacks, strokes, and the need for stents or bypass surgery, suggests a recent study that randomized over 15,000 people with diabetes to either take a daily aspirin or a placebo, a fake pill, for an average of 7 years. While an aspirin a day is recommended for people who have had a heart attack or stroke, the benefit for people with diabetes who do not have cardiovascular disease has been more hotly debated. There are risks from taking aspirin for some people, so always talk to your doctor before starting daily aspirin. New insulin guidelines. Previously, the American Diabetes Association recommended insulin as the next medication for people who were already using 2 or 3 other medications but still needed help reaching their blood sugar goals. That's changed starting in 2019. New guidelines recommend a different type of injectable medication instead, GLP-1 agonists, or GLPs, which are used once daily or once weekly. Not only do they lower blood sugar, they may also help you lose a few pounds. Many are considered to be heart protective too. There may still be occasion where doctors recommend insulin. It's a good discussion to have with your primary care provider, endocrinologist, or diabetes educator. The next little column is titled Climbing Higher. Take your fitness to new heights alongside Team Novo Nordisk without leaving the gym. The world's first all-diabetes professional cycling team has teamed up with KinoMap, a free app that turns any cardio equipment, an exercise bike, treadmill, or rowing machine, into an engaging live-action experience. Whether you have a smart Bluetooth-enabled machine or a basic trainer, you can use this app to ride side-by-side with the squad through original training and racing footage captured in scenic international locations on their 2019 tour. And to get that, you visit kinomap.com. That is KINOMAP.com. We have some other short columns here. The Goldilocks effect. Insulin keeps its effectiveness longer when it's neither too hot nor too cold. Until the manufacturer's use-by date, unopened insulin is best stored at 36 to 46 degrees Fahrenheit, which is fridge temperature. Store opened insulin at room temperature. These tools can help keep insulin and you safe no matter where your summer takes you. The first product is Med Angel. Together with the Med Angel app, this wireless thermometer will notify you if the temperature of your meds goes out of range, even in the fridge. That is $50 at medangel.co. And Frio. This one-of-a-kind case uses evaporative cooling, aka magic, to keep meds cool and safe, without ice packs or refrigeration. And that starts at $20 and is at frioinsulincoolingcase.com or frioinsulincoolingcase.com. Ask Toby. I forgot to take my insulin before I eat. What can I do to remember? Signed, Forgetful. Dear Forgetful, rapid-acting insulins like Humalog, Novolog, and Apidra should be taken 10 to 20 minutes before eating, but it can be hard to remember to do so. To help you develop the habit of taking your insulin on time, try setting a goal that links your medication routine to an existing habit that you already do before eating, such as washing your hands. A goal statement using cues might be, 15 minutes before I eat, I will 1. Wash my hands, 2. Check my blood sugar, and 3. Take my insulin. Setting a goal like this that is specific, you know exactly what you have to do and when, and that holds you accountable, i.e., it's easy to tell if you followed through or not, can help you develop a new routine into a habit over time. Establishing a habit is difficult, especially in the beginning, but rest assured that it will get easier as time goes by. And I'd like to thank you for tuning in to Sound Body today. Stay well, and please come back next week for more healthy living ideas. This has been Sound Body, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Louise Craig. And I hope you'll join me again next week for more health updates and information for healthy living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.